it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show. Coming to you live from Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. You got the full CHGO White Sox crew with you. I'm Sean Anderson. Alongside me, Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Ecknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox as well. We're being produced today by our friend Sarah.
Hi.
Hello. And make sure you hit that thumbs up button and subscribe to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We just had a huge day here at CHGO Sports. The Blackhawks getting the second overall pick in the NHL draft. We had a live stream to watch it, and then we had a post game, basically, post draft.
Post-lottery show.
So we got you covered if you're a Chicago sports fan, whether you're a Sox fan, Blackhawks fans, Bulls fan, Bears fan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are coming to you live after another White Sox loss. They lose 5-1, weren't shut out. So thanks, Paul DeJong, with a solo homer. We'll take it. But I feel like a lot of Sox fans are feeling like Dan and Southside Sox are. We're horrible, absolute trash. I'm tired of this. And Dan saying, I try to stay positive, but this is ridiculous at this point. Vinny, you noted it. It's their 36th game. They are now 20 games under 500 with an 8-28 record. Woohoo!
It's not good. Not good at all. Listen, I think had those first 3 weeks or however many weeks it was where they were just doing this kind of thing on a nightly basis, not been so extended, a night like this probably wouldn't be terribly affecting toward anyone, but you can't help but look at it and realize that this is the same old thing, right? And I think that the way things are going, the way things look right now, I don't think this is going to be an infrequent occurrence the rest of the summer either. So there's a tease. Stick with us for nightly coverage. But yeah, they didn't look good. They didn't hit. They didn't pitch very well, even though the run total for Tampa Bay wasn't that big. They even didn't field very well with another kind of glaring moment in the field from the aforementioned Paul DeJong, who, of course, was the only reason they had any runs tonight. So I guess you take the good with the bad there. But not looking good really in any aspect right now. And like I said, I'm not really sure that anyone is expecting that to change.
And it's like a broken record. We come here and we talk about they did some things fundamentally wrong. The pitching wasn't up to par. The hitting wasn't up to par. I mean, they've been shut out more times than they've actually got wins. So this is a recurring theme for the White Sox, and it probably won't change. And somebody asks, you know, why is Ortega getting bats over Colas? I mean, I've been asking that. Or why is Dominic Fletcher hitting home runs in AAA instead of getting struck out here in the major leagues? I would much rather that, because I don't care about Rafael Ortega. No one should. I mean, except for his family and himself. I'm sure he's a sweetheart of a man. But that's not the future. Let's go to the future. This team is 20 games under 500 on May 6th or 7th right now. And it shouldn't be this way at all. We didn't think it was going to be this bad. But we're here. And it's not going to change. And Brad Keller's getting innings. And Mike Clevenger's getting innings. Instead of pitchers who are down in the minor leagues. Like Drew Thorpe, who did Drew Thorpe things again down there in Double A.
Yeah, we'll have our minor league recap and Blank Name brings up. Maybe we should just do Barron's pre- and post-game shows, which I don't think it's a bad idea.
Hey, I'll be in.
You got Edward Caro. You got our guy Tim Elko. You got Drew Thorpe.
B-H-A-M.
Eric Adler.
That's our new name, B-H-A-M.
Jairo Iriarte.
Jairo Iriarte. Hell yeah. If you could scroll up to Sarah, to our guy Ellie, he said, basically saying, the White Sox didn't suck before you guys started your podcast, and now since you've started your podcast, the White Sox have sucked. So do you guys want to guess? This was our 360th game since starting.
Almost a full year.
Yeah, look at that. 360th game since the podcast has started. We did launched March 4th, 2022. So counting the 2022 season, 2023 season, 2024 season, 360 games. What's the record?
Oh, so this isn't counting the ones we didn't do shows for? Or is it just team's record since we started?
Because team's record since we started, but the entirety of the first season is included.
I mean, I don't know how to count it down, but so we've lost 60 games more than we have won. So however that is, whatever that record is in 360, four games?
150 and 210.
Yeah.
So they got a 41 win percentage in our 360 games. I think even someone right there bringing up Fun Bad. Are they Fun Bad? Is this
no.
Fun? So Fun Bad, I don't really know the definition, so maybe we can work on the definition.
I would say Fun Bad is like you're making like bloopers all the time, right? Mm. Like it's just a team that like literally is just like an error on every play kind of thing.
I've heard like teams that score runs and then give up leads.
Yes.
So it's like the idea of like, even when they win, or they snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, so to speak. That's Fun Bad?
I think so.
Yeah, scoring runs would be great. And then losing, I'm like, that's tough. But at least they scored runs. At least it's an enjoyable game to watch. This game was not enjoyable in the least. Not even the Paul DeJong home run. It was good. It's good to have a hanging slider and crush it. But otherwise, this game was just boring. Soroka didn't give you a chance to start the game, but eventually he settled down and got his job done. But there was nothing like a threat except for that one time they had the bases loaded and Gavin Sheets gets a 3-0 and he pops it up.
I'd argue that the shutouts are likely more Fun Bad. I mean, I would rather see them chase the record of, 33 shutouts in a season than, a one-run game because Paul DeJong hit one solo homer. Like, I don't you can keep the scoring 2 and 1 runs. Like, either score 5 and lose 8-5 or just get shut out 33 times and become the Brooklyn Superbas. Like, I'm cool with that. Anyways, Nate E saying Rick Renteria's teams were Fun Bad.
See, I don't see the difference. I mean, I get the difference in where they were, but like, I was there for those loss heavy Rick Renteria seasons, and everyone was just as mad as they are right now.
That's fair. But like, 2019 felt a little different, huh? I mean, 2020 didn't feel that good. I remember Fun Bad from Boers and Bernstein, and they said is finding bright spots or glimmers of hope in spite of losing. There's Corey Lee.
Yeah, that's if you want to, if that's how you want to define it, at least in the last rebuilding, the previous rebuilding years, you could point to the minor leagues and point to even, increasingly stuff on the major league team where you'd say, oh yeah, that's coming. Year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, look what this is going to be. Obviously, this being the first year of the new rebuild, those things seem pretty far off at this moment.
Because we just have 30-year-olds playing the field. Whether it's Rafael Ortega, having a good old time in the eighth inning, making two nice plays, or Paul DeJong olaying a ball at shortstop. That man's 33 years old. The man's probably gone through, thousands and thousands of fielding practices at shortstop, and he's olaying balls. Yeah. I mean, what is going on with this team?
Like, he was setting up to backhand that ball all the way, then it hit the lip of the grass, and then it got low again, and then he was way out of position to make that play. But as you said, he's been making these plays since he was a child, and he's been in the major leagues, known for the glove, and he's got 5 errors already on the year. Not good. I mean, I know he's going to be an upgrade over Tim because Tim had an all-time bad year with a negative 16 defensive run saved. But Paul's going. Paul's coming for him.
Yeah. Paul DeJong now has more errors than homers, and he's got 4 homers. So, I mean, I think that's leading the team?
Both?
4?
In both categories?
Aloy has 4? Yeah.
Is that tied for the lead? How many does Gavin have?
It must. I think that's the high is four, I think.
Okay, hold on. A four is the highest. So Paul DeYoung and Corey Lee has three, Benny has three, and Gavin Sheets has three. So,
sad.
On. And you talked, too, about improving the defense. This was posted by Casey Bogoslaw earlier today before the game. Do you know where the White Sox rank in defensive runs saved?
I'm going to say they have been pretty mediocre, so probably like 17th.
Nope.
Lower?
Oh, yeah.
26.
They're 8-28.
I know.
Lower than 26.
28th.
Wow. Lower than 28.
29th.
Yeah, lower than 29.
Oh, my God, White Sox.
They're the
Sox.
Worst team in baseball.
No fucking way.
Negative 31, I believe, it's defensive
now
run
that's,
save.
Listen, I think a lot of stuff on the offensive side, even the pitching side, really, you could say, yeah, what were they supposed to, what were they going to do? You know what I mean? Like, I think everybody walked into this year thinking, yeah, that's not going to be very good. But, man, they're the worst defensive team in baseball by that one measure. Mm-hmm. That is a big-time failure after that was the entire talk of the offseason from Chris Getz was, hey, we're going to improve the defense. We're going after this player to improve the defense, that player to improve the defense. The worst defensive team in baseball?
Yeah. Well, pitcher, they've been plus one. So there you go. Hey, all the pitchers they brought in, they've been doing their job. Defense, we talked how bad Martin Maldonado is. They're at a negative six for catcher. Andrew Vaughn's been plus one at first base. So, hey, there you go, Andrew Vaughn. Congratulations. Second base, minus one. Third base, minus one. And that's with Yoan Moncada getting injured. Maybe it would be a little bit better if he was there.
Yep.
Paul DeYoung, minus four. The Twins are at minus six, so they're worse than the White Sox. The Pirates are at minus six. They're worse than the Sox. The Diamondbacks are at minus six. They're worse than the Sox. And the only team at minus four with the Sox is the Red Sox.
That's, so what? This is specifically at the shortstop position.
Shortstop gotcha. Position. So they're, what, sixth worst at shortstop in Major League Baseball? And then in left field, negative five.
Oh, my God. In, attendee.
In center field, because of Luis Robert Jr.'s injury, negative seven. And then right field, negative three. So team total, negative 31.
That's very bad.
That's absolutely brutal. I mean, and the person they brought in that, I mean, at least Nicky is, I mean, he's a minus one, so he's not doing his job. And then the other person they brought in for defense, Paul DeYoung, bad. Martin Maldonado, bad. It's just, you had hopes. And I would think these guys would have been upgrades over the people they had last year. But obviously, they're not ascending. Might as well just play people who are younger and can make errors and then correct those errors. Because we talked about Paul DeYoung. He's not younger. He's not getting younger. Neither is Martin Maldonado. Just play my man Corey Lee. You saw what he did today. Threw a fast runner out at second base with a cannon of a throw.
Yeah. Hey, I'm all for more Corey Lee. Future all-star Corey Lee.
Two hits today, too, again.
Hell yeah. Let's go. I'm all for Corey Lee. Maybe we'll see a little bit of, I don't know, maybe Adam Hackenberg. Chucky Robinson soon. It doesn't seem like Martin Maldonado's getting the boot, but, you know, you can coach from the sidelines. I think that's where most of them coach. I think that's a good idea. He could put together his great game plans on the plane and not play and save his knees.
Hell, I mean, Jupiter keeps on getting kicked out of games. I know he only kicked out one. He can be the catching coordinator or the assistant to the catching coordinator or coach. Hell, because he's not doing anything on the field. Might as well help us off the field and be a coach immediately because that Martin Maldonado is toasted.
We're going to take a break. We're going to let you know about some of our great sponsors, and then we'll get into some Michael Soroka talk. We'll also talk about the youth and if they should be playing it. We do have a Chris Getz quote to give you. So, Dave, unfortunately, even though you think that Getz might not have been the best hire, we will hopefully have you hear us out and hear out a Chris Getz quote. But Ellie's saying, Jonathan Hood said they won't win until 2030. Why am I watching this? And I believe the best answer, because we talked about this during the game, we've kind of saw after the Sox won two in St. Louis, maybe a little bit of apathy in the Sox fandom, because it's not fun bad. They're not the worst team in baseball. They just won a series, and that kind of takes you away from, oh, this team is historically horrible, to they're just a horrendous nightmare. The only thing that I could tell people that feel like Ellie, it's a pastime. This is supposed to be a diversion. This is supposed to be a hobby. This is supposed to be something that is agreeably passes your time, and you don't have to lock in. Like, I know that the whole point of CHGO is serving diehard fans, and I think this is a lesson for diehard fans that maybe sometimes it's best to take a step back.
Well, just continue to watch us.
Yes. I mean,
you don't have to watch the game. That's what we're here for.
We'll watch it for you.
Yeah, we're going to watch it. Each of the games that we have a post game, we're going to watch those games. And unfortunately for Vinny, sometimes you got to go to the games and watch those things live and then talk to people after. I mean, he enjoys that, but goodness gracious.
I mean, I'm not losing. I'm exactly. Perfectly happy to go.
Yeah, you don't have a losing record this year.
Do you get free food in the press box?
They have some hot dogs out usually.
Oh, hey.
I heard Ryan had brownies today at Wrigley.
That's annoying. We didn't get brownies. We got free food. Yeah. I won't complain, but we didn't get brownies. I mean, that's not great. All right, let's take a break, and we'll let you know about our great sponsors, like our friends over at Game Time, Herb.
Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting baseball tickets faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all your sports, music, comedy, theater, everything near you. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. And Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. That's why I buy exclusively from Game Time. I'm going to the game tomorrow, the Padres versus the Cubs. I'm a big-time Padres fan, so I got to go and see them while they're in town. I use Game Time each time because of the Game Time guarantee, which says if you go to Game Time and buy your tickets and then go to any other secondary market place and see a ticket that is lower in your section and row, send that information to Game Time, and they'll give you 110% of the difference. And with all-in prices, they show you the total up front, so you know that you're getting a great deal without all the hidden fees. And also, they're obsessed with finding ways to help you save money. Game Time has deals for tickets right up to the start of the event, and even an hour after the event starts. It's the place to go for last-minute seats. And with zone deals like I got up in Milwaukee, you pick the section, Game Time picks the seats for an average savings of 18%. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. Terms do apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CHGO for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed.
Thank you, Herb. And we also want to let you know about our friends over at Circa Sportsbook. Download your newest bookie today with the world's largest sportsbook, Circa Sportsbook. You could have the world's largest sportsbook right there on your fingertips. And not only are they the world's largest sportsbook that is offering you the best lines to wager on, not only are they not limiting you based on your winnings, every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do limit winning players. The best part about Circa is the real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike other books who use chatbots. I had to call a toll-free number recently to talk to a different sportsbooks support group. I had to press 1 and then wait like 20 minutes to get a call back. The person called me back. They didn't have a license to take care of me, so then I had to go find the headphone button on their app and try to get to the support group. And then I waited in line. I was 14th in line and had to wait like 45 minutes just to get through the queue. It wasn't fun. There are real people at Circa. And we'll just take care of you right away.
People think that the White Sox game is no fun?
Right.
That's no fun,
okay? and I was doing it during the White Sox game, so it was kind of like double trouble. But with Circa, there's no issues like that. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app. That's circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you or somebody you know may have a problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Text GMB to 833-234 or visit Are You Really Winning? .com. We also want to let you know about the takeover that's coming up on the 27th. Against the Toronto Blue Jays, we will have our first CHGO takeover of the year on May 27th. We have takeovers on the 27th, the 24th of June, and the 9th of August. If you go to the event page in the description now, you could buy tickets to that event on the 27th, and even on that page, you could buy a pass for all three. So you can kind of bundle it together if you want to go to all three games. Gives you a discount already on the price. And I believe you also get a T-shirt when you buy that pass. So it's a great time to buy your takeover tickets if you haven't yet. Maybe it's not the best to physically sit down with your friends John Triffin and Steve Stone and watch the games. Maybe it is better at the ballpark. Maybe it's better out there with your CHGO friends and fellow diehards. So why don't you come out to our takeover on May 27th at 1:10 as the White Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays. All right, let's get into the game today. Sox lose 5-1. We'll start with Michael Soroka.
You got to wait because, Vinny, we were talking about yesterday when the Rays scored 6 runs, you get Papa John's for 50% off. Giordo, apparently, Do you live in Tampa? If you live in Chicago, Giordo, never, ever. Hey, Jake, is Papa John's a sponsor?
Not yet.
Papa John's is terrible. So, Giordo, you deserve your sickness at 8 o'clock this morning because you're trying Papa John's.
So
if you're in Chicago, that's a penalty.
You ate Papa John's at 8 a.m.? Or he got sick at 8 a.m. because
whenever.
Of Papa John's?
Could be Papa's revenge.
Papa's revenge.
Yeah, come on, Giordo.
It's not the best idea to eat Papa John's. But again, if you are in Tampa and you're getting the deal, I get the idea of taking advantage of a deal. I won't be a stickler on the deal.
There are some things you don't even take the deal on.
No. I mean, but like, do they have Tampa pizza?
You put that case, you put that little lid down on the button. Howie Mandel says, you want that deal? You say, no deal.
Giordo said yes, and I don't know what he said yes to. He said
probably
yes to some.
All of the above.
Yes, he said yes to living in Tampa, Chicago, and to not having any good pizza around him. All right, let's get into Michael Soroka today. It wasn't the best start for Soroka, but I guess there are some silver linings. It easily could have ended in the third inning, but he was able to get two more innings for the Sox, so hey, silver lining there. And then the other silver lining has to do with his mile per hour, but why don't we start with Michael Soroka in this start with his fourth loss, now with an ERA at 6.34. Is there any hope for Michael Soroka as a White Sox? Them being 20 games under and looking for starting pitching innings, his best help? Because there's not a lot that's saying, let's give this guy a leash. Like, if I have to see Soroka or Jonathan Cannon, I'd rather see Jonathan Cannon at this point.
Sure. I don't think we're at that point, as we'll probably get into over the course of this show, where the White Sox are just saying, hand the reins over to the young guys. It's just not happening right now, as you see. They're adding more veterans, right? Mike Clevenger's here. Tommy Pham's here. If you say, is there any hope for Michael Soroka, I think the answer is, well, it's not all gone, because he's going to keep getting starts. Yeah. And he can do his best to try to turn things around. But as of right now, I mean, he has not really been impressive in any way. I know there's a few games where folks have been curious as to why he's been taken out as early as he's been taken out. Maybe the opportunity hasn't been as great as perhaps it should or might have been otherwise. But a game like today, it's just not really competitive. I mean, he didn't really even give up that many hits, but he's walking guys all over the place, putting guys on base, and it's the third inning, and we're like, oh well, that's it. It's going to be another day like it was yesterday. Mike Clevenger only got six outs. Michael Soroka maybe he's only going to get nine of them. So It ended up being a good job by him to eat the innings. He ended up not, as you saw by the numbers there, he only gave up three earned runs, not having the worst day as he possibly could have. But I don't think anybody has been terribly impressed, probably Michael Soroka chief among them, with what he's been able to do in a White Sox uniform this year. And if you're asking the question, is there hope of him having success? It basically is just on time, because I don't think you can point to anything that he's done so far and say, oh, if he does that again, just wait, he'll turn around and they'll be able to trade him, or he'll turn around and he can be part of things. It just looks like he is doing the job of eating some innings right now, and he's not even really doing that all that effectively either.
Yeah, the silver lining for me is that he was up to, 76 pitches after three innings.
Yeah,
he was getting blasted and throwing a lot of pitches to get blasted. And then we were like, okay, is he coming out for the fourth? Came out for the fourth. Had a decently short inning for what he was before those three innings, because I think he had 20 pitches in each of the first three innings.
21, 27, 28, and then he walked a guy in the fourth but only had 15, and then in the fifth. At 11.
Yeah, and so you could take some solace out of, okay, he didn't start well, but he finished strong, and his fifth inning was his best inning of the whole outing. And so you could say, okay, that was at least a positive we could take into your next start, because I think he'll be starting versus the Guardians coming up this weekend in Chicago. So that's a positive. But the negative is he only threw 59 strikes out of 102 pitches. That's woeful. That's really bad. And this Tampa outfit is good, and they can put bats a ball, but they're not great. And so I don't know if he doesn't have command of his pitches as yet, but it's 6-7 starts into the season. When are you going to have it if you're not going to have it now? The conditions were perfect. I don't know what was wrong. or you're just scared of the Tampa Bay Rays and what they're going to do with the bat. So I just didn't like the outing, but he did give the White Sox bullpen enough of a rest from what they were yesterday. So it wasn't a great start because five innings is not good for any starter, but he only gave up three earned runs, as Vinny said, and he battled through his wildness and got through that outing without, you know, having the bullpen have to cover six innings or cover five innings. They only have to cover four.
Pedro has talked about this a couple times at this point this season, and it really applies to today. The offense and the state that it's in makes this start look worse by Michael Soroka, because he gave up four runs in two innings and in three innings and we assumed the game was over.
Yep.
I mean, four runs is not something that should be insurmountable for a Major League Baseball team, but the White Sox offense is not scoring runs, not competing in a way that makes you think that a four-run deficit can be erased. And think what that must feel like for the pitcher himself, yeah, to go out there and say, okay, I gave up two runs early. I give up two runs that weren't even my fault, really, because of the error by DeJong setting up the homer for a Rosarena. I give up four runs. It's not the worst, and yet it feels like a blowout. Yep. And that's tough on the starting pitchers. It obviously makes it tough on the bullpen as well when those starting pitchers are coming out of the game as soon as they are. But the margin for error, it's not just small. It's basically non-existent right now. And until the offense can show that it can back these pitchers in some way, I mean, Soroka could have just given up that home run to a Rosarena in which one of those runs would have scored because of an error by one of his defenders, and they would have lost the game 2-1. I mean, that's how small that margin for error is. I'm not saying Soroka pitched well, because I don't think he did, but the results of what he did are not, you know, worth, you know, crapping all over for no reason. It's the tandem effort of the pitching not being up to par and the offense not being up to par that makes a four-run game feel like a 10-run game.
Right, absolutely. And two, like, the silver linings that I see from Soroka specifically, 12 whiffs on 45 swings. That's a 27% whiff rate. Last year, Clevinger's was around 23%. So, I mean, he was higher than the Sox best starter was last year. And the best thing, over all four of his pitches, he was up in velocity. On his slider, which he featured the most, he was up 0.7 miles per hour and maxed out at 86 miles per hour on his slider. His four seam was up an entire mile per hour. His sinker was up 0.9 miles per hour, and his changeup was only up 0.5 miles per hour. Seemed like that affected control. 25% called strike plus whiff rate. He wasn't able to get those called strikes, and I think that led to, obviously, the four walks that we saw. But if he's able to maintain this velocity and he's building velocity, I think that makes him a more interesting piece. Because if he's just going out there with the same stuff and he's getting horrible results, then I think you know what you have, yep, in Michael Soroka. But is there still, with this 26-year-old, the idea that he could just be building on health, building on strength, and finally, after he got eight bad starts out, could he finally be getting to the healthiest place where his stuff is in mid-May?
We'll see. I mean, I think the idea, I mean, you look back at his year last year, he didn't make that many appearances at the major league level, yeah, so you could certainly make the point that he's getting back into the swing of facing major league hitting on a regular basis. But in terms of his stuff, in terms of his pitching, he's a guy who told us in spring training that last year in AAA, he felt something click for the first time that he had felt that in a long time. I think he was supposed to show up to spring training, yeah, not ready to be Cy Young or anything. I don't think anybody's expectations were that high. Heck, I was questioning whether he was even going to make the rotation into the spring until he had a very nice performance in Cactus League play. But this is a guy with pretty good experience as a pro ball player at this point. You would imagine that if he felt really good last year in AAA, he has major league experience, he should know what he's doing by now. And to have these results on a pretty consistent basis, you said the ERA is what, up to 6.5 almost?
Yeah.
It's the performance hasn't been good. Now, can he turn it around? Like I said, he's going to have the opportunity to turn it around. I don't think he's going to get booted from the rotation or anything like that. But, you know, I don't know if you can put him in the same category as somebody who might do enough to get traded by the deadline. Granted, there's a lot of time left. There's 3 months worth of baseball before the deadline comes. But he's a free agent at the end of the season. Yeah. He's got to make some sort of move if he is going to be of value to the White Sox. The only way he would be of value to the White Sox without getting traded is if he pitches low-key enough that he doesn't get a lot of interest in free agency, but the White Sox see something they think can be better in 2025.
Just want to give his updated ERA numbers, my bad. It came into the game with a 6.48 ERA, and he lowered it to 6.34.
Hey, small victories. But as Vinny said, he doesn't have a lot of time to prove himself to the White Sox because they have to make a decision on him by the end of the year. Are we going to bring him back? He's going to be a free agent. Or are we going to trade him before that in July? If he starts pitching and all the remaining starts that he has, like the Mike Soroka that they thought he was going to be because they named him the second starter out of the gate, I don't know if that necessarily correlates to Garrett Crochet is the best, Michael Soroka is the second best, Eric Fetty is the third best, as we've seen. That's not true. But they gave him the ball the second game of the year. And so if he pitches like they thought that he can pitch, I would think the White Sox would be willing to get him on some other team because he's on a free agent contract. He's young enough where somebody can think, like, hey, he had a good early career start, and now I see what he's doing with the White Sox. That looks like a promising thing. We can get him in our lab, and we will have him fixed up because he'll only be 27 next year.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I guess I was trying to phrase that as it seems like with Brad Keller relieving Soroka today, Is there somebody on the way out? Because they currently have six starters, we think, in Soroka, Flexen, Keller, Clevinger, Crochet, and Fetty. It seems like one of Soroka, Keller, and Flexen either needs to be moved to the bullpen full-time or possibly cut.
I'm not sure it does, Sean, because I think if you look at the way that they've used Chris Flexen over the past few weeks, they've been perfectly fine with starting him, throwing him to the bullpen for whatever they may need, and then 8, 9, 10 days later, he's making his next start, right? So I'm not sure that somebody needs to be, you know, I'm not sure it needs to be an ironclad five guys. I think they could keep playing with, hey, man, we need Brad Keller tonight. Chris Flexen's going to make the next start, not Brad Keller, or vice versa. You could just – and listen, Jared Schuster's still on this team, too, as a long man out of the pen.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he pitched yesterday. He relieved Clevinger and gave up a couple runs.
So, I mean, there are three guys who you could call long men in the pen right now. One of them can be kind of float into that rotation spot whenever it comes along. The White Sox maybe can help their bullpen health by not dedicating that spot to just one guy. But again, we're not talking about that necessarily being this awesome strength of a contending team. I mean, this is just the state they're in. And I'm not sure any of those guys, what their future, any of those three quote unquote long men, what their future looks like on this team for the long term.
And to your point, Vinny, if you guys remember last night in the eighth inning, Chris Flexen was warming up when Tanner Banks was kind of getting to his pitch limit, and they were thinking, hey, maybe we're going to have Chris Flexen in this game. If Tanner Banks ran into trouble, we were all like, no, don't do that, because it's a blowout. This game, they haven't scored any runs, so why would you waste Chris Flexen, who was scheduled to pitch tomorrow in the finale of this series? And so, yeah, he's just being used whenever they need a arm out there, either starter or bullpen. I would much rather have him in the bullpen. But, you know, the White Sox like his flexibility. That's pretty much why the reason they signed him to that deal that they signed him to.
We'll wrap this up. Just the only thing that I wanted to add on was the future rotation. Tomorrow will be Flexen. And then to open up the Guardian series on Thursday will be Fetty, followed by Crochet, Clevinger, and then Soroka on Sunday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. On Mother's Day, you'll get the lovely present of Michael Soroka starting for the Chicago White Sox. All right, let's take a break. We'll let you know about our friends over at Salerno's and Lucy, Vinny, we had some lovely Salerno's pizza today.
Yes, we did. It was a nice little thing to come into the office, too. They really hooked us up with a great meal, because we had, obviously, so much going on here with what the Blackhawks were doing, and then, of course, both the Sox and the Cubs playing this evening. So a big thank you to them, first and foremost. But, hey, what you can do to get some Salerno's in your stomach is stop by Salerno's on Tap, located at 1201 West Grand Avenue in Chicago's West Town neighborhood, and enjoy tavern-style pizza and ice-cold beers. two best thing, the best combination probably you can think of.
Pizza and beer.
Absolutely. Peanut butter and chocolate, get out of here. Pizza and beer. Whether you are headed to the game, want to watch it live on the big screen TV, or just watching from home, Salerno's has you covered. Go to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444. Mention CHGO. And guys, this is the important part. Listen up. As someone is about to drop this pizza shake. Boxes on my head, mention CHGO and get half off your pizza. Half off? You got to be bleeping me. Guys, head to Salerno's Pizza or call 312-666-3444 for more information. And remember, mention CHGO and get half off your pizza. I'm not talking that you mention us and because they don't like us, only half of a pizza is going to show up. I'm talking that the price is going to be half of what you would normally expect to pay. Salerno's.
Very, very good deal. We also want to let you know about our friends over at Lucy. Lucy Nicotine is made for your nicotine routine, and it gets delivered straight to your door. You don't have to make those frustrating weekly gas station stops. You could sign up for a monthly subscription with our friends over at Lucy Nicotine. You could save 15% off, and there's no commitment, and you could cancel at any time. Lucy is 100% pure nicotine. It's always tobacco-free, and you could choose your form. They have pouches, breakers, or gum. They have their breakers, which sets them apart. Their pouches, but with a tiny capsule inside. That capsule contains liquid flavor that saturates the pouch before it's even in use. You could break it with your teeth, get it situated, and boom, you got an instant boom. Instant nicotine release when you need a boom. It's a turducken. So level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to shoplucy.co/CHGOSocks and use promo code CHGOSocks to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. So head over to lucy.co and use code CHGOSocks for 20% off and always free shipping. And
that's wild that we were briefly dropped into a Tough Actin Tenactin commercial.
Oh. Remember, Lucy products are only for adults of legal age, and every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. All right. Let's get into what Blank Name is referring to, and we're going to talk about this because Vinny did post up at All CHGO an article about the possible trade pieces in Mike Clevenger and Tommy Pham. You can go check that out. And there was,
and others.
And others. Like Brad Keller or maybe Chris Flexen.
I was thinking more like Luis Robert Jr., but there's a tease for you. He's in there. He's mentioned.
Is he? Was he mentioned by Bob?
No, he was mentioned by me.
Right. No, but yeah. I know you based a little bit off of what Bob's notebook said, and I don't know. I'm just trying to recall what Bob's
I just referenced names. Bob's notebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Just,
man, that's like, Sarah, that's a great plug there, but that one's from some time ago.
Oh God.
You could head okay. to the most recent one too. But if you want to, hey, I would
from April.
I would go ahead and I would shout out you're on like page two or three here.
Well, our website is messed up.
It's brand new. It's not messed up. It's brand new.
That's
what
just messed up.
No, something's messed up.
Yeah,
okay, well,
up.
Anyways. All right.
Sorry, Sarah.
Anyways, if you head over to allchgo.com, you should be able to find Vinny's article, which has a Chris Getz quote that is important. Did you want to clarify anything before I give the quote?
You can give the quote.
All right, I'll give the quote.
Right, just read the whole quote.
Here's the whole quote.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure to get the whole quote and nothing but the whole quote. Quote, "You've got 6 months to play baseball, and we're at the end of April," Getz said last month. "There's going to be plenty of bats and plenty of innings for our young players that we want to see up here. We want to surround them with guys who have had some success, and there's a lot of value in that. Certainly, some of these players that get the opportunities on one-year deals to show what they can offer to Major League Baseball, there's other chances to perhaps grab some value at the trade deadline or at some point to help once again to get our organization healthy." That's the full quote there. I guess my biggest frustration with that is you see with the Marlins and a guy that I liked for the hire, I liked Kim Ng, but they go out and get Peter Bendix from the Rays, a guy that has gone through and built a team from nothing with the lowest amount of payroll in Tampa, and he sees a guy in Arraez that is valuable. And they get him off the team, not only because they can get a value for him immediately, but also it frees up playing time for the younger players. I guess with the White Sox being 20 games under 500 already at May 7th, and I think Nady phrased it as there's some players in baseball that have more home runs. Like there's four players in baseball that have more home runs than White Sox have wins. Like it really just feels like at this point, it doesn't really matter what veteran presence Tommy Pham, Martin Maldonado, Paul DeJong can bring to this team. Let's see which players will actually be on the team come 2025, 2026, et cetera.
Right. I think there's a difference in the Marlins, at least the very specific situation you cited with the Marlins. We've already spent multiple shows here questioning how weird that Marlins trade was with mm-hmm. Luis Arraez. But I guess the point is, the White Sox don't have a Luis Arraez, right? They don't have a guy that, with the exception of Luis Robert Jr., who they can point to and say, oh boy, just wait till the trade deadline. This guy's going to fetch us something, right? So they got to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see if anything sticks. Because right now, they're saying, well, wait till the trade deadline. Maybe Tommy Pham will still be hitting well. I mean, Tommy Pham's a guy who just signed a minor league contract.
Yeah.
Like, Tommy Pham was out there for everybody to have. They've got to hope that one of these guys, one of these veterans that they're giving all this playing time to right now, can perform in a way, catch some lightning in a bottle, but lightning in a bottle over a three-month span that allows them to then say, that was a gamble that really paid off, and we got probably way more than we should have, considering where this guy was when he was acquired by this team. Mike Clevenger, the same way, right? You're seeing a lot of veterans that maybe could have fallen into that category. What if Paul DeJong was hitting out of his mind right now, right? What if Paul DeJong had 10 homers and was the talk of, you know,
He's tied for the team lead still. He's got
sure.
four.
But I guess I'm just saying, like, you know, Soroka is a great example, right? What if Soroka comes out and he's the all-star from earlier in his career all over again? Then all of a sudden, they're getting something. They're getting great value for these guys, right? Because there isn't somebody who's going to come in at the trade deadline. The only person is Luis Robert Jr., right? They had that same hope for Aloy, the same hope for Moncada probably. And those guys have either gotten hurt or not performed well. Obviously, there's a lot of time left to turn that around. But I think that Chris Getz is trying to create opportunities because there were so few to begin with, right? We talked about how trading Dylan Cease this offseason was probably the one opportunity he had to make that big splash. And he waited and he waited and he waited, and now he's got a couple of guys in the minor leagues that could be something. But I get why the White Sox are doing this. And have this strategy. I just don't know if the payoff is going to be there. I think it's a high risk roll of the dice, right? Not high risk because of the team's performance. They're not supposed to be racking up the wins. But if Mike Clevenger and Michael Soroka and Tommy Pham and Aloy Jimenez and Yoan Moncada and Chris Flexen and whoever else from a veteran standpoint aren't doing well, what trades are they going to be able to make? And then all of a sudden, you've just spent 3-4 months of a baseball season where some of those at-bats and some of those innings could have gone to younger guys. I mean, Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon, we bring those guys up because they've been called up. When you call those guys up, that, to me, tells you that you think they're ready.
Yep.
Right? Drew Thorpe, when the White Sox got him, Chris Getz was touting that the Padres were considering putting him in the big league rotation for opening day.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's gone out and he's dominating double A. I mean, what's to say that he can't just jump to the big league level and see what he can do, right? I mean, I don't know what the White Sox think. Maybe they want to see him at triple A as well. That would make sense. But they just called Brian Ramos up from double A. I know there's 40-man roster implications with that one too, but here he is kind of holding his own a little bit, right? So I think that the safer play and the one that has the greatest amount of or the most likely payoff, the safest payoff, right, for the long-term future is to play the younger guys now. I get why they're doing what they're doing. They're trying to create opportunities to put more talent in this organization, and maybe it'll work. Maybe Clevenger has a great 3 months and they're able to trade him for some prospects. Maybe Tommy Pham keeps hitting the way he's been hitting and they're able to trade him for some prospects. But if they don't and they're just on the team all year,
right,
that doesn't really do anything for you in the long term. I think it's a risky proposition to dedicate so much time to those vets when you could be dedicating at least some of it to some younger guys.
My main problem with bringing on the Phams and the Clevengers of the world to play for the White Sox is, say everything goes right for both of those players. They perform at the top of the level. It's the best you're going to get back from them. A Dominic Fletcher type player, a Zach DeLoach type player. Mm. You're going to get back a Nick Nastrini type player. So you're getting what you already have at home.
Well,
just
well,
nice to have two of each of those
just
things.
Just play
right?
those yeah. guys.
But also no, because
I mean, that's,
like,
I'm saying that's at the highest level of those guys performing. And if you trade them, you'll get maybe that back.
Well, no, because Fletcher and DeLoach are like 25, 26. They'd probably get a kid like Fernando Tatis,
who's worse.
Hasn't even made it to the rookie level ball, and is probably still in the DSL.
That's worse to me. That's a roll of the dice. Tell me how many Fernando Tatis prospects like that that hadn't played in the major leagues came up to be Fernando Tatis.
Fernando Tatis.
And, exactly. And he had some ringworm medicine that helped him a little bit in that
endeavor. He's still fine.
Hey, man.
I mean, so here's the thing. There was someone shared, because with Mike Trout's injury, like war leaderboards through age 29, and Mike Trout was number one, Mickey Mantle was number two, and Barry Bonds was like 20th. And it's like, oh, yeah, Barry Bonds, who I think most people, like from 40 to probably 25, my age, or I'm not 25, I'm 26.
In your face.
Ha. You know, people think Barry Bonds is the greatest person of all time. And it's like, or greatest baseball player of all time. And it's like, we're really just looking from his 39 to like 42-year-old seasons where he did have a help from maybe some ringworm medicine.
Yeah.
But like,
hey,
you know, Barry Bonds still a great baseball player. He's still 20th in baseball. Through
understood.
Age
he get to a
29.
Level. He was a skinny kid, and the ringworm medicine helped him get to the level he's at now. And now we can probably just maintain it with regular legal drugs, but, you know, I'm sure he got help from those things. But I'm saying, like, the fact that you're playing these people and you need them to play at their 90th percentile to get something back that you already got at the house makes no sense to me. And so while Tommy Pham is doing well, at the end of the day, you're going to get back somebody like Zach DeLoach or, as you say, a lottery ticket that's 19 years old, which to me is worse. So why are you giving this guy playing time? Why are you doing it to Mike Soroka? Why are you doing it for all these people? When you have actual people who are ready for the major leagues, we've seen Nastrini and Cannon, they can give better performances or just as good as performances than what we saw in Soroka, than what we have seen from Flexen. So I got it. I know that they signed these people to major league contracts and they're on the team, but it's time for the youngsters. They're 20 games back, 16 games behind the Guardians. Even if they sweep the Guardians this week, 12 games behind them. So it's really bad right now, and I would rather – that would be fun bad, seeing youngsters grow and seeing, okay, that might be something to look forward to, because you saw a home run today from Dominic Fletcher down in AAA, his first AAA home run for the White Sox. Maybe you see that in the major leagues. That would be much better than seeing that down in AAA and then Tommy Pham doing what he does in the major leagues. Who cares?
Man can rent a car. I'm not that excited about Dominic Fletcher, okay? Let's chill.
But they traded for him.
Yeah.
They
traded away up to 21-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Whether you think highly of him or not doesn't really matter. The White Sox thought highly of him and were planning on giving him ample playing time in right field.
And then Robbie Grossman showed up.
And like, that's enough.
Yeah. That's enough. Get out of here. We have to play Rafael Ortega in center field.
Yes. And I mean, Dominic Fletcher wasn't setting the world on fire by any means. I mean,
no.
I don't think if he showed a blank resume, anybody would be mad with him going down to AAA. But this is the guy you traded for.
But like,
this is the young guy that you traded for to do this.
Don't you let him flop, especially with the injury to Luis Robert Jr.? Like, why do you call him down? I think it's just such a...
I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. But like, it's frustrating because it's just like that Mana trade. You trade away a guy who's 21 for a 26-year-old, and that 26-year-old's just kind of proven that he's a quad A player. Like, I know he went deep today, but I think he went deep off another quad A player in AJ Smith-Schauer.
I mean, maybe they didn't even give him a month in the major leagues.
That too. I mean, you look at the 26-man roster, and Dominic Fletcher wasn't the reason why. You know, they were so bad.
And I'll say this to Herb's point. I mean, like, I do get the idea of stockpiling as much talent as you can, right? I mean, if they turn Tommy Pham or Mike Clevinger into even a lottery ticket, that's good for them, right? That's good for their future. But, I don't think anybody is trying to argue, man, you need to throw Nick Nastrini because he's going to go 20-0. Like, he might not be any good at all. But there's value in finding that out.
Exactly.
Right.
No, absolutely. And that's why when you see Ramos today go 1-for-3 with a walk, I thought it was really aggressive to call up the 22-year-old and have him skip Charlotte altogether. But with Moncada having an injury and with third base being open, why not? Why not just give Brian Ramos all the runway until Moncada takes that spot back? And then, two, once you maybe move guys at the deadline, we heard Chris Getz throw out Yoan Moncada as a first baseman. I mean, Andrew Vaughn's not setting the world on fire. Maybe from August to the end of the year, with Moncada having $20+ million still on his salary, like maybe you try him out at first base to see if he could play first base for the 2025 team. You're not going to spend that much money in free agency because there's really just Juan Soto in free agency, and I don't think they're going to go out and spend, you know, $350 million to get Juan Soto. They should, but they're not going to. Why not give it a shot where Moncada plays first base and Ramos gets the chance at third base? Like, I'm all for it, because if Ramos is looking this athletic already and he's looking locked in to this point, I'm all for him going through the trials and tribulations of any young player and trying to figure out what works as a major leaguer, because he's likely going to be on the 2025 team.
Yes. I think under different circumstances, the idea of him coming up because he's on the 40-man and then going down when whoever, Danny Mendick, gets healthy, you know, it's not an unusual thing to see. Mm-mm. But they are not under those other circumstances. They have 8 wins in 36 games. They have the opportunity to do something like you said. Again, I'm not in the room. I don't know if Chris Getz and Paul Janish and Josh Barfield and everybody else have vastly different plans for Brian Ramos's development. Maybe they say, hey, when you're done here, we want you to go to AAA and do that, what you just said, all that struggling and figure things out at AAA. Maybe they think that's what's right, and if that's the case, then there you go. But if they are of the opinion after watching him for 10, 12 games up here at the major league level that, hey, why not let him try to keep figuring it out at the major leagues? That won't negatively affect his development. Then this is the year in which you can do something like that.
And what you're talking about with, you know, sending him back down to AAA, I know this is different because Ramos is actually getting playing time, but didn't they do that with Popeye Rodriguez last year where they needed to call him up and then he really didn't play and then, hey, go to AAA, guy, and do your thing and then eventually get cut.
And Sean and I talked on Sunday that, I mean, at first blush, that's exactly what I would expect to happen to Brian Ramos.
But they're playing Ramos. To their credit. I mean, like, we saw the one game where he ended up coming in as a replacement in the ninth, but outside of that, he's played in every single game.
Last three.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, they're doing this right so far. 3 out of the 4 games he started. I just want to see more of this. Let's just lean more into this. And to the point, we'll get into our minor league recap for the day. The Charlotte Knights were playing a bright and early game at 10:15 in the morning, and our diehard Discord was lighting up after Colson Montgomery swung at the first pitch, took A.J. Smith-Schauer deep for his 6th homer of the season, and then, as Herb mentioned, the second guy, Dominic Fletcher, went deep for his first homer in Charlotte. So shout-out to Colson Montgomery. He hit a 400-foot homer, 108.5 miles per hour off the bat, and as Sam Dykstra from MLB.com writes, the White Sox, as a team, have hit only 4 homers with exit velocities above 108 this season. Colson has 6 homers. 4 of them have had EVs of 108 or greater, 109.9, 108.2, 113.8, and 108.5. Now, for a little bit of trivia,
okay,
who are the White Sox to have homers with 108-mile-per-hour exit velocity?
How many home runs have there been?
There's been 4.
And how many players does that encompass?
3.
Okay.
Eloy Jimenez.
Has 2.
2 more crushed homers. Who's done it?
I would say Gavin Sheets.
Nope.
Wow.
Not Gavin Sheets.
Luis Robert Jr.
Luis Robert Jr., yep. That one off of Kenta Maeda that he hit 450 feet. Mm-hmm. He was on the White Sox for a little bit. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. I remember that
then
guy.
Then one more.
Vaughn hasn't hit one, so it can be him.
How about Corey Lee?
Nope, not Corey Lee.
I feel like that was
Andrew Benintendi.
Not Andrew Benintendi. Come on.
Yoan Moncada.
No.
Does he even have a homer?
No, he doesn't have a homer.
Okay, well then it's not him.
No, he doesn't have a homer.
I'm just trying to think of a...
Martin Maldonado.
No.
Oh, Corey Lee.
Corey Lee was already said.
All right, Paul DeYoung.
Paul DeYoung. There we go. He's tied for the lead with Eloy and homers on the team. He's got 4
but you
homers.
Just asked me who hit one random home run.
No, it's true. No, I know, but I'm just saying, hey, he's got a lot to contribute. So, yeah, I'm just saying let's see more of Colson because it does seem like he is extremely athletic. I know we talked about his slow start to the season in AAA. He's 22 figuring it out for the first time. And in his last 13 games, let's see if you guys like these numbers. 11 for 45.
That works.
7 runs, mm-hmm. 4 homers, mm-hmm. 13 walks.
Let's go.
13 strikeouts.
Perfect.
244 batting average.
Don't care.
424 on base percentage.
Baby.
And a 556 slugging.
That works.
Listen, that's Let's the go. Thing. The number with Colson is the on base percentage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, as Pop, you just read off a bunch of extremely powerful home runs that he's hit. He's going to do that. But, man, it's those walks that sets him apart as a hitter. Getting on base over 40% of the time. I mean, like, that is rare. That is really, really impressive. And now he's doing it at multiple levels. Obviously, the sample size is small. I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't have a problem. I don't really care. But the idea that Colson Montgomery might stay in AAA for an extended period of time, that he won't be here at the major league level tomorrow. Here comes the rain.
Dying? What the hell? That came quick.
That's a lot of rain.
That's a lot of rain.
The idea that it won't be at the major league level tomorrow is not a bad thing, because I think they are focusing really hard on this guy being ready, and when he comes up to the major leagues, he's going to be their everyday shortstop from the second he sets foot at the major league level. Let him. You read off 13 game stretch. That's not a lot.
Mm-mm. Right.
You can read off his entirety of the stats from his season last year. It was 60-something games. We talked about him struggling over the first month of the season. It was the first month. That's a small sample size right there. Let him have an extended stretch. This guy's job is going to be to play 150 games per year,
yes,
at the major league level. Go ahead and let him play 100 at the minor league level in one season, something that he has not done yet.
And that's fair, too, because, I mean, we saw Andrew Vaughn obviously get rushed up to the major leagues. There isn't a rush. The White Sox don't need to win games this year. But I'm not against him, like, playing shortstop at a major league level, because I kind of want to see if he can do it.
But, like, he might be better suited to do it after spending months instead of weeks at AAA.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, like, I just heard recently that naturally most rookies struggle in their first month. Their worst month of baseball is typically April, like their first true full month in baseball. Like, do you just want to get that out of the way with Colson? Because we kind of saw, like, he needed a month to get used to AAA. Like, what if he needs a month to get used to Major League Baseball? And also, I mean, you got Paul DeJong Olaying balls at shortstop. Maybe Colson Montgomery isn't doing that and just getting down and putting his glove down and fielding the ball.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's going to be weird to say this, because I do want Colson Montgomery on the team, but I don't want Colson Montgomery on the team because of Paul DeJong's deficiencies. I want Colson Montgomery on the team because he's dominating AAA and it's time to go. And I don't want him to be a Jackson Holliday. I want him to be on the team, and then he's on the team. Struggles and all. Hitting under 100, good. Learn from this mistakes. Errors every day, good. Learn from it. But if he's dominating AAA for another month and doing what he does, I don't care about that 240 average. It doesn't matter. As Vinny says, 40% on the bases in AAA, get that guy up here. If he's doing this through the month of May, get him up here immediately.
I mean, yeah, 556 slugging percentage will work. I mean, when he is hitting the ball, he's hitting it far. So we'll take that. 4 homers, I think 11 hits, and then there's also 2 doubles. So 6 of his 11 hits are extra base hits in that 13-game stretch. All right, the only other thing that I want to bring up, and it'll just go into the minor leagues, so let's talk about some minor league recaps. In AAA, the Knights lost 7-4 to the Gwinnett Stripers. Do you know who's playing for the Gwinnett Stripers?
I do. I got a hit on it.
You saw?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead and say.
My guy,
is it Leury Garcia?
It's Leury Garcia, who has a .337,
damn,
.380, and .474 slash line.
Having a nice year.
Hey, if we're seeing Rafael Ortega, if we're seeing Andrew Benintendi, if we're seeing Robbie Grossman, Tommy Pham, why not bring Leury Garcia back? I mean, Danny Mendick's been back.
No.
Why not Leury Garcia?
No.
Why not? He's a legend.
He signifies for me a bad era, even though he did go to two playoff series.
I find it hilarious that John Triffin is a huge fan of your work, because you are a hater. You're just a hater of the White Sox history, legacy, and their hallowed halls. I mean, this is a man who has the last postseason home run for the White Sox, and you're not even going to welcome him with open arms. Well, yet you're welcoming Paul DeJong.
Well, never would do that.
Woof.
He's from Antioch, so I had to welcome coming home.
Leary's a legend. Anyways, they lost 7-4 today. Colson had a homer. Fletcher had a homer. They went back-to-back. Again, last 14 games for Colson, 244, 424, and a 556 slugging. He's got six homers on the year. All of them have been over 104 miles per hour, except one. One was at 91.3 miles per hour, which I'm just surprised got out, and it was off old friend Declan Cronin. So that's a little fun note there for Colson Montgomery. In Double A, the best team in the White Sox organization by far, the Birmingham Barons. Blank name is correct that we should probably just be doing pre and post for the Birmingham Barons.
B-H-A-M.
B-H-A-M. They got good colors down there. 2-0 win tonight. Edgar Caro hit his first homer as a right-handed batter tonight. He's been doing very well from both sides of the plate. It is his first home run, but his OPS is over 1,000 as a right-handed batter, so it's just not facing as many lefties as he typically does. But Caro hits his first as a righty today. Also, Tim Elko hit a homer in the game today. He hasn't been great. His OPS is under 700, but hey, we'll take a homer where we can get him. And then most importantly, Drew Thorpe. He had 14 whiffs on the bump today.
The Thorpedo.
5 Ks, 5 2/3 innings pitch, two hits, two walks, and a 1.01 ERA so far for Drew Thorpe. Also in that game, Eric Adler, who's trying to find his footing in Double A after recently being called from Winston-Salem, went one innings pitched with 3 Ks. Let's talk about Thorpe. You've talked about Getz and...
Let's talk about Thorpe, baby.
let's talk about Thorpe. Getz said that the Padres thought of putting him in the major league rotation. You see struggles from Keller, Flexen, Soroka. Is there not a promotion coming for Drew Thorpe soon? And if it is a promotion, do you put him in AAA where there is this horrendous bandbox that you have to pitch to in Charlotte? Or is it time to call him up to the Major League Baseball if the Padres and a different Major League organization even thought that he might be ready for that promotion?
I think he's ready for the Major Leagues right now. He's dominated single A last year, and he came up for 5 starts in Double A for the Yankees organization, dominated there with a sub 1.5 ERA, and this year he's doing the same. He's doing even better, actually, this year. And so I don't know if there's much more to prove in the Double A level for Drew Thorpe. He's striking those people out every time he goes up there, having no runs given up against him. I think they've gotten like 6 runs in his 6 starts against him. It's not a lot. The guy is out here dominating that level for 10 starts, or now it's 11 starts, through his career. There's nothing else, I think, for him to prove down there other than to just keep on pitching down there and wasting bullets, I would assume, down in AA instead of being in the major leagues. I don't want him to go to AAA because he'll get pounded. And it won't even be being pounded. It'll be, you know, fly ball. You said a 91-mile-per-hour home run went out, or exit velocity went out. So that's not going to be good. Drew Thorpe throws change-ups, fastballs, doesn't have that much of a arsenal that's high velocity. So bring him up to the major leagues and let him learn, just like we want them to learn with Colson Montgomery, like Brian Ramos is learning right now at the major league level. There's nothing to lose. Would you rather have Drew Thorpe struggle at the major league level or Mike Soroka? It's easy. It's an easy thing. The guy's younger. The guy's got more talent. The guy's got more of a future than any of the pitchers on the White Sox, sans Gary Crochet. And so if he's your second best guy looking to the future, why not bring him up already?
If your player development department feels that he's ready for the major leagues, there's no reason to keep him back. I think it goes back to what you were just saying about Colson Montgomery that really applies to everybody in the minor league system, and that's don't bring him up because anything going on at the big league level. Bring him up because he's ready. He's dominating down at Double A. They talked about how he was having a very nice spring. Maybe they think he's ready. Maybe they don't. But if they do, then there's room to make. You know what I mean? It's why I'm kind of hung up on the whole Nastrini Cannon thing, because it's like, if you think they're ready, then let them go.
Right.
Don't just let them sit at AAA. you know, and I would say the same for Thorpe. Now, Thorpe, they might think he's ready for AAA, and if that's the case, then put him in Charlotte and see what happens. But the idea that they need to give innings to Clevinger, they need to give innings to the Kellers and Flexens and Sorokas of the world, obviously those guys are not going to be helpful for the long-term health of the team.
Sorry, I got distracted by the chat. I don't know why you guys think we're broke and only have one studio. We have Studio B. If the Cubs guys want to go into Studio B and start their show, they could go into Studio B and start their show. So, hey, we could just do as long of a show as we want, and the Cubs will still be able to do their show. Credit to Cody, though, for not screaming his head off.
I was
and
shocked.
Michael Busch hitting a walk-off homer.
I heard him say, like, oh, that's going to go. And I'm like, oh, they must be losing by, like, 10 right. because, like, it must not make any difference. And then I saw the celebration in the reflection of the TV there, and I'm like, wow.
Did they sing that dumb song?
I mean, not in here they didn't. You know, they probably did at the ballpark.
They hit the flags. But yeah, hey, I mean, hit the thumbs up button and the Cubs show will start when it starts. So relax. All right. With Thorpe, the one thing that I'm mainly interested in, and I understand like not wanting to put him in Charlotte, but he might give up some cheapies, but I think the best thing about Thorpe is I think he's just got great deceptive stuff. He's got a true pitch mix, and he's got this disgusting changeup that makes him pretty much unhittable to both left-handed batters and right-handed batters. I don't know if there's going to be enough of a increase in talent level going from double-A hitters to triple-A hitters. I think the true jump will be for major league hitters, so why not see him? And two, I want to know how his fastball actually plays because we see the Shota signing for the Cubs, and we see him get a grade of a 40 fastball from Fangraphs before he debuts. And David Adler of StatCast just put out a piece today at MLB.com about Shota's fastball and how it's the best fastball in Major League Baseball, even though it's only 92 miles per hour. And what I'm wondering with Thorpe, and we haven't been able to really put this to StatCast data, is does he have a Shota-like fastball where he's got excellent rise and he's got excellent arm side run, where it's deceptive and you have Tatis and whoever on first and second and Manny Machado's up and you throw a middle in fastball and Machado's swinging through it, right? Like, why is that happening on a 92-mile-per-hour fastball? It's because of the rise. I wonder if Thorpe does have a fastball that will grade out better because he's able to put rise and lift on it, and I don't think we can really see that until the major league level. He has a 35-grade fastball. Shota has a 40-grade fastball. Maybe there wasn't enough true data points to see how good Thorpe's fastball is, or maybe how different it is, and maybe the reason why his changeup's so good is because it works so well off of his fastball. I'm just interested to see, you know, how Thorpe does, and I'd be excited to see him come up to the major league team as soon as possible. All right, final thing. Advanced Day, Winston-Salem loss 6-5. Tanner McDougal had 15 whiffs, 7 Ks in 5 innings for the Winston-Salem Dash. Damn. And former second-round pick Wes Kaff, who's only 21 years old, hit his 5th homer. His K percentage is down about 10%, and his slugging percentage is up to .460. So Wes Kaff, even though he hasn't really popped so far, the 21-year-old is seemingly finding a rhythm down in Advanced Day. And then in Lower A, the Kannapolis Cannonballers lost 9-5, and the biggest thing
the Dolly is, score.
Oh, yeah. 9-5. There you go. Hey. Ryan Gallany, former 13th rounder in 2023 for the Sox out of Wofford. He had a homer and had a walk today. He's now got 2 homers on the season and a .328 average and a .952 OPS. The White Sox, hopefully, you're going to be developing hitting.
They are the Terriers, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes. Correct. Yeah.
You got to
get Wofford stuff.
But, yeah, no, it's exciting to see Brooks Baldwin, Gallany. I know even now I'm blanking on the guy's name who's stealing all the bags in Birmingham.
Oh, yeah. Just got to get my Riku Nishida guy,
not
too.
Jacob Burke. Yeah, Nishida, too. But there are some intriguing bats that seemingly are developing outside of Colson and Brian Ramos. So I know that their top 30 is mainly pitching heavy, but it does seem like there are some outer edge hitters that are still developing in the White Sox system, and that's always a big win. All right, we're going to wrap it up for the CHGO White Sox podcast. That's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Ecknerwall23, is our CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show. And make sure you hit that thumbs up button on the way out. We will talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye. All silly like the mayor.